there. I don't think grab my coffee. Okay. And yeah, first question I'll ask you, mind if I smoke during the interview?
No. That's fine.
Okay. I will keep it to a minute because I imagine also, besides not following sports, I'm not a real big fan of cigarettes.
Oh, I've done my share smoking.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, I got to apologize. I will get back to see the show, but this weekend just got way too hectic and stuff like that, and yeah, I haven't but once. But my...
Wait.
Pardon?
You saw it at the opening.
Yeah, that to me is probably the worst time because there I ended up talking to you, talking to Paul, scanning and glancing as opposed to seeing.
Right.
And at which point it's, yeah, nice, and but it's nice to go out. I'm viewing that as going to a vernissage. It's like going to see a friend's band.
Mm-hmm.
And it is supportive. But yeah, as far as actually being able to understand, see, and so on, it's not. You go home, you take the CD, you put on the headphones, and you listen. Or you go over and you look.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to look at the images.
Yeah. Well, no, that's secondary. I'll get back there. It's up till the 12th, right?
No, but the images on the CD for the interview.
Okay, no. There's the one thing that I also like is that I've used to be, because do you ever listen to CJAD?
No.
Okay. While ago, I used to be on CJAD fairly regularly because I was working in the record business.
Mm-hmm.
And I became friends with the DJ or announcer whose program I was on, and we'd always talk about music and stuff like that. And he always said that he was a big fan of a Larry King style of interviewing,
right,
which is basically don't read the book, talk to the person, and at which point, if by talking to the person, they can then intrigue you enough to make it sound interesting, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, upon hearing that, I was like, damn, that's like ridiculous, that's silly, and so on and so forth. But then, now that I've started interviewing, given that my take is to try and, as opposed to use the multisyllabic words, talking about theory up to here and so on,
mm-hmm.
And for lack of a better term, dumb it down or make it much more accessible,
mm-hmm.
and sort of talk about art in a rock and roll style,
mm-hmm.
realize that the Larry King, what I call the Larry King style of interviewing, actually is extremely helpful, because then where I'm not going to go in cold, I have seen, although it is not an in-depth analysis, but it is the sort of thing of just saying, okay, I'm coming in at a very low level, which is where the potential readers for the interview that I want them to come in. If I'm talking about spouting stuff about negative space and the interface and how it interpolates, then it's the sort of thing, yes, there are people who are interested,
mm-hmm.
but they can read Parachute Magazine. They don't they don't need to worry about that. It's to get somebody who is into Arcade Fire or Celine Dion. And so, and then also it's just making it up by the seat of my pants. It's okay, no, I haven't seen, so yeah, we gotta go.
Okay.
My first question though is, the chicken wire man, what I call the little man hanging off like off the side, that I'm fascinated with in terms of, I can recognize that using the chicken wire so as to create them and stuff like that, it does play on, but it's still, given that I tend to view you as a paper artist, and although I didn't go up and touch it and stroke it to make sure that it was chicken wire, it's my guess that it is chicken wire.
Yeah.
How, why, that strikes me as being sort of like one of these things is not like the other, one of these things just doesn't belong, and it does fit in slightly, but it doesn't fit in entirely to me within the concept of the show. So how did it come about? Why? Is there something that I'm missing?
Well, art making's a long, sometimes a short process, but there's always a process of, you have an idea,
mm-hmm.
either it starts with a word, sometimes it starts with an expression.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I like working with local expressions,
mm-hmm.
or just expressions in English or French,
mm-hmm.
and going from there. Or either it's some kind of image that you have in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And they often come both ways for me. For
mm-hmm.
this piece, It started out with just a little drawing that I have of the television.
Okay.
Remember the title
yeah.
of the exhibition is Neige Noire,
yeah.
or Black
yes.
Snow in English, which is really not quite as evocative
mm-hmm.
as Neige Noire. But the drawing that I was using, that I wanted to bring in, make a sculpture,
mm-hmm.
was a television with a childlike or a small person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really say it's a child, but it's somewhere between adult and child.
Yeah, I call it a little man.
A little man, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just standing on the television.
Okay.
And looking out,
mm-hmm.
looking for the horizon. And for me, that person was saying, can you see me yet?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started working with the... I didn't really know what materials I was going to...
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea how I was going to make this person, but using my own knowledge and my own experience,
mm-hmm.
which is working with paper,
yeah.
and to make paper sculpture,
mm-hmm.
paper, it's something that is... It has no bones.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all skin.
Yeah.
So you have to give it a structure somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And either you cast it, like imagine an egg carton,
mm-hmm.
so it's pressurized
yeah.
so that its own fibers are strong enough to hold it into a huge shape.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to make that, you have to make a very elaborate mold system.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a possibility. But I wanted something that was lighter. I wanted something that was air,
mm-hmm.
more invisibility, more sense of snow, more
mm-hmm.
sense of, I ended up calling the piece Whiteout.
Okay.
So that's where I decided to use chicken wire.
Mm-hmm.
And I would make the form, and my idea was to dip the chicken wire into paper pulp,
okay.
and the paper pulp will stick
mm-hmm.
to the shape. And from there, you can just build it up
yep.
and put paper on top of it. I did make some molds. I did, you know, I tried all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got the little man shape, I was intrigued with it. I liked it as it
mm-hmm.
was. And, well, either you go farther,
yeah.
you can,
mm-hmm.
and you pull back, which is kind of what I did, or you just fire on and you wreck it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what art making
yes,
is for me. It's a bunch of decisions.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing I've realized in talking to people is one of the questions I'm always fascinated by, especially in
yeah.
much more abstract or conceptual stuff, is how do you know when it's done?
Yeah.
And at which point did you get a wide variety of answers, but by far and away the most obvious one is it just looks it. And
there's something that just rings
yeah.
inside
uh-huh.
you and goes, ding, it's
yeah.
cooked, you know,
mm-hmm.
don't go any further,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, try something
yeah.
else. And it wasn't even finished then, like,
mm-hmm.
I just dipped it in the paper pulp,
mm-hmm.
so that you get a contrast of
yeah.
The wire and the white,
mm-hmm.
so it's darker, lighter,
yeah.
which neige noir,
mm-hmm.
that evokes black and white.
Yeah.
And it's also closer to drawing.
Mm-hmm.
The lines in space, the whiteness, the darkness.
Okay.
So for me, and it didn't even stop there, the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
I had two of them. I don't know if you remember, but his right arm goes right into the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes, it's either his arm is in the wall
mm-hmm.
or the wall has eaten his arm. It's that ambiguous
mm-hmm.
state. But I originally had two of them.
Okay.
The other one didn't have a left arm, and this one didn't have a right arm. So they were kind of like glued together.
Okay.
But I wasn't quite happy with it, the
mm-hmm.
way it was working.
Well, there it's if you have two of them that are sort of mirror images, you
yeah.
can also then, if there are other pieces that come, the first thing that strikes me is, you know, the... not the Hello Kitties, but you go into a Japanese restaurant and they all have the welcome cats.
Yes.
And at which point they have the mirror images and so on, and at which
mm-hmm.
point you could then also, if somebody wanted to go on, say, okay, there are these references, which
mm-hmm.
Obviously my guess would be you would not be not been aware of at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, for me it was more of reference to childhood.
Okay.
That's one of the influences of the exhibition. Looking at childhood, snow, the experience of snow as a kid. And I played hours and hours in the snow with my little brothers, so for me that was the other person.
Okay.
It was the two of us in the snow. And it ended up being just me, or just him, or just this little person.
Okay. And how did the little person end up on the floor as opposed to on one of the TVs? Yeah, that was the initial impetus with the drawing.
Well, do you remember the head?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
On its side, like sleeping in this block of plaster.
Yeah.
I originally made this, that was to be part of the sculpture too, that was to be the person's head, and that was a mold that I made to cast paper and put it on this person. But what happened, and you know, it's just, that's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I put the, it was in a drying process. The plaster mold was drying. So I put it on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it sat there for a long time. And I just, you have to stop at some point and look at things.
Mm-hmm.
Look at where they are. I find I have a tendency to just keep barreling on. It's that kind of work ethic.
Yeah.
You just have to work, and you have this goal you're going towards. But sometimes if you're relaxed enough, and then you sit back and you really see things, the way they are and what is really happening, then it'll take you in a totally different, unexpected direction.
So it's not that the little man moved off the TV, but something else moved on.
He became autonomous.
Okay.
And the TV and the head, which I think are much more, there's much more of a dialogue, a conversation going on. Like maybe I will continue at some other point and make this other sculpture of a little person standing on a TV. I still like the idea.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But for this show, it became two modules looking at each other, the head and the TV. They're like two heads.
Mm-hmm. No, there it's a recognize the dialogue, talking to each other, and so on. The one thing that I will, sort of almost disagree with you is the, I view them and then also all the, much more snow that's on the wall, which you'd said, which you said is one piece.
Yeah.
To me, it's, I view them as three distinct pieces that are interrelated, but still wrapping my head around them as one piece. I'm saying, I can see it, I'm not entirely 100% comfortable with it.
Did I say that the three pieces were one piece?
I think it might have been Paul who said it, or something.
I think he
up.
Always saw them as one piece,
okay.
But I always saw them as quite separate. I saw the two sculptures as one, and the wall piece as a separate piece.
Okay.
But the way the works are set up in the space, there's obviously a dialogue or there's interaction between all of the pieces because the space is small and because it is an exhibition.
Yeah.
So.
Now it's interesting, and then sort of realizing sort of that everybody else comes up with their own interpretation.
Yeah.
And that's always one of the things that I find most fascinating is that, I'll come in with my opinions, but hello, your opinions, somebody else's opinions are just as valid.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the fun of getting feedback from other people. You see how people are seeing things. Because I'm so focused. I see what I see, and I'm trying to create, make visible what is invisible out there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, and other people are following me too, but they're bringing themselves, they're bringing their views, their eyes.
Yes.
It's natural. It's great.
To bring it back into a music thing, it's sort of like everybody who's in a couple does have their song.
Yeah.
And at which point that just gets so loaded with meaning for those two people that it goes beyond whatever the songwriter or somebody else hearing the song has. And it's having that same effect with art and so on, and saying, it doesn't have to be our piece, although there is, that would be a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, it's the, to me, our song is always the first song you hear when you're kissing. And I have to go back and figure out what Luigi's and my first piece was. Because it's not as obvious to have art hanging out while you're kissing.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to have to work on that idea.
Unless you fall in love with an art show.
I met it in an art show.
Well, maybe it's that artist's.
And to me, it's galleries are always the best place to, if, like, if you're looking to meet people.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a whole rant on that, but we don't have to deal with that because we're focusing on then on a much more pedestrian level. Have you sold any of the pieces so far?
No, not yet.
Okay. Which then leads me to the question, what's your take on the Montreal art market?
Oh, it's pretty lame.
How?
We're talking about sales,
okay. Is or are sales necessary to creating an artistic community? It's like if the Montreal art market sucks, then why are you still here?
Ah, well, I love Montreal.
Okay.
I've been here for a long time.
Okay. Then actually on a more sort of along this lines, it's what do you have any ideas on how to make it better?
Market? I think it's really a long-term thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's education.
Mm-hmm.
And the government's cutting back on education for children
mm-hmm.
in schools in art and music and theater,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a huge mistake. I think there are a lot of things the government could do to encourage buying.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to do with our history.
Mm-hmm.
It's
because I take it to my mind. There's too much government interference.
Well, I think if they encouraged, they had tax measures that encouraged collecting. If they encouraged people, like it wouldn't take a grant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Instead of pitching money at things all the time, all you'd have to say is, okay, you get a tax benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Write that thing off.
Now, there in my mind, it's that.
It just makes so much sense to me. It's
that,
like, simple.
I like that idea. There, my take on it is that because artists have gotten so used to sort of getting funding for grants, and
mm-hmm.
it's not a great living, but it is a living.
Yeah.
And at which point, then there's no sort of thing pushing. No, but it's like welfare.
Welfare. Welfare, they send you your check every month.
Mm-hmm.
You at least know you get that.
Mm-hmm.
With a grant, you'll be roaring 1 year, and then the next
mm-hmm.
year, because you've abandoned all your ways of making money,
mm-hmm.
you're even worse off the next year because you don't have any way of making money.
Okay.
So it's
mm-hmm.
nuts.
To me, it does, but it is a structure that
it helps.
Yes, it helps.
Don't throw it away.
No, to my mind, is look at Ontario, look at the States.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I can tell, Toronto does have a much, much bigger art market.
But
I'm not
maybe
certain that the
because
art.
Because they have more money there, too. There's more business. I'm not sure
If you're still having those creative ideas, those rich moth expressions that sort of, bam, they just squirt out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think whether there's money or not will prevent them from happening.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is no government money to which won't support it, however minimal,
mm-hmm.
then at which point you say, okay, so how am I going to make money for this? At which point then it forces the artist to become much more of a huckster or a salesperson and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And at which point, you end up hassling the gallery. Hello, have you sold yet? I got to make this month's rent. This is ridiculous. Okay, well, maybe we bring the price down this, but
mm-hmm.
because the pressure is there in terms of I got to put food in my belly, and that's where I'm seeing the difference, although I don't know enough about the German model, where they seem to have a very vibrant art market,
mm-hmm.
but they also have a lot of government support, so at some point I have to go do my research.
Yeah.
But this is one thing that is just my big soapbox. As I recognize, there are there are a humongous amount of artists here, and it is wonderful, but just everybody ignores me.
I know.
Which
just
is just
totally ignored.
Now, back to the show, because that was just a sideline. In terms of neige noir and stuff like that, where did the idea come from? I can recognize the idea, and I know a little bit and so on. Do you have one of my favorite terms is like a eureka moment, where suddenly, ding, 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 it shows up, and you say, ooh, this is worth following.
Yes and no. It's a lot of, from the initial the whole thing started many years ago with dreams about snow, which I subsequently made a video and did a lot of little performance pieces using snow. I think what triggered the whole thing was the daughter of a friend from Mexico came to visit. And for some reason, she decided to give nicknames to both myself and to Paul. And she called me Warm Snow. And I just found that really intriguing. And I was working with snow because I was finding myself increasingly angry and frustrated with winter. And I thought, well, what the hell is that? This is a northern country. Every year we have winter. Why am I always fighting it? What, you know, what is that in my psyche or in Canadian psyche that we just don't like winter? We're so frustrated with it. And so I wanted to do a series of works just exploring winter, just and especially snow, because, well, snow I seem to like, but hate, and the cold I definitely hate. But snow is something beautiful. It's something that I can relate to as an artist.
And how long ago was this?
Well, the snow pieces, that's, I started, I guess that would be 5 years ago now.
Okay.
Yeah. I went to Finland on a residency and did a lot of videos.
I see this.
Took a lot of videos.
Yeah, this is one thing that I've slowly realized, given that I've seen the show and then had the studio visit. So from the studio visit, I had assumed, and now I'm realizing incorrectly, that bam, you just worked in one medium.
No.
And at which point, that was one of the things which was very surprising on my thing, was to see different medium where I realized I probably should have felt better and said, no, it's not
what. Well, paper is a very strong metaphor and material for me. It's something that I really like for what it is, its malleability, and also for its symbolic. It's a container. It's a, it's carried all that information for centuries. I just like it.
No, it's very, very
and
cool.
And I use it a lot. And whenever I can use it and it feels appropriate for what I'm trying to express, I will use it. But, you can't always be making videos with paper. It doesn't work.
And actually, as an aside, just a quick, do you know the store Origami on Green Avenue?
No.
It's a store, it's basically a paper store, but it's high-end, fancy paper, like gift objects, knickknacks, doohickeys, handmade paper. Have you ever, if you haven't, if you're not aware of the store, but if, given that the market sucks, you might want to try just showing up there, talking to the manager, saying, I have these really nice paper objects, and seeing if putting them into a much more sort of commercial aspect works at all, and whether they take them on consignment, whether they take them or say no thank you or something. But just realize,
I have tried that. You know, the Japanese, it's called Papier Japonais, it's on Fairmount. Yeah, I've had work in there.
Okay. That's a big difference between the people who frequent the
maybe
place on Fairmont and on Green.
Yeah, it's more artists going to
Japanese. On Green, just get rich people.
Okay. I'll have a look.
Okay. It's, Green in between Sherbrooke and De Maisonneuve on the east side of the street.
Okay.
About a quarter of the way down from Sherbrooke. I can get you the address if you want.
No, that's all right.
But yeah, to backtrack onto the show, if you had the first idea of doing something with snow about 5 years ago, what were the sort of, I don't know, points in the line to it coming to fruition as a show?
Well, in making this video, I realized that the static on television.
This is the video you made in Finland?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, just when you start using a medium, certain things, certain material aspects, I always like to look at this, the symbolic, and the material aspects at the same time. I like them to come together as a kind of metaphor. So when I realized that, oh, there's the snow, we call it snow on TV, and I just was fascinated with the idea of why would we call that snow? And as a kid, I lived way out in the country. We had, you know, I was maybe 4 or 5 when my dad brought home the first TV. And television reception was really crappy, so half of TV was always in this snow. And I just found it fascinating that, you know, the image was always coming out of snow and being eaten by snow and just moving in that way. And I liked it. I liked the idea of that being called snow. And then I found out that it's actually, in part, it's like the television is capturing an image of what we call CMB, which is cosmic microwave background radiation. It's a mouthful of smaller words. But what that is, it's minuscule, invisible particles of light. I argue with Paul because if it's a particle, it can't be invisible. But anyway, it's a technical.
Okay. I was always under the impression there were radio waves as opposed to light waves.
It's both. It's
okay.
What it is, they call it a cool glow. So it is a light wave.
Okay.
And it's from, but it's both. The sound and light.
Okay.
And it's from, they imagine or assume that this is proof of the original Big Bang. And they can measure it.
Yeah.
It's apparently, it's this, the way of measuring when the Big Bang happened by looking at how it is escaping, how it is expanding into the universe, and how quickly, so they can measure it. I probably screwed up a lot of the details of that explanation, but essentially that's what it is.
Okay.
So it's like this invisible thing that's there all the time, influencing us or not, I don't know, and it goes right through our bodies. It's like neutrinos, which is this other cosmic background element that's in the air that comes from the sun. And it goes right through the earth, right through our bodies, the same way as cosmic microwave background radiation does. And I just thought, oh, that's really, I just like that. I really like that idea that something invisible being out there that is there. And that you can see it on TV if you want. And we call it white noise or noise.
Yeah.
TV smoke.
And so then from the video to what was the next step?
I knew I wanted to, I've had this obsession with walking on the tops of snowbanks or edges.
Okay.
Whatever. And you've seen the pieces I did previously using the horizon, the horizon as a line for writing texts, talking about geological or geographical movements. For example, the tectonic plates and on the earth, how they move about the speed of the growth of your fingernail.
Yes, slower.
Well, things that I've read, that's about the speed they move.
I always figure I just cut my fingernails about once a month. And that's,
But they're moving.
Yes.
Slowly we're going west. where was I going with this? The horizon lines and subjective notions of home and place, where I move, where I live. So it's these two ideas of movement in the universe and on Earth coming together on the horizon line for me, which is very much a, it's kind of a gyroscope for me. It's a balancing element.
Okay.
Because I grew up in the country, of course, there was these big, open, empty spaces, which I could feel part of. I didn't feel, in the city, I often feel lost or dwarfed.
Okay.
I feel not as important or significant. Whereas out in the landscape, I feel more relationship to the earth.
Well, there, my take on that would be just that.
The opposite, maybe?
Well, not necessarily the opposite, but in the country, for lack of a better term, focusing on you as the entity is way easier because there are so far fewer of other people out there.
Yeah.
In the city, becoming part of, there are distinguishing yourself is
and
much more difficult.
It's also a physical thing, it's the buildings. They cut off the horizon for me.
Okay.
They cut off the contact with the rest of the planet.
Okay.
We become very, it's like this thing all of its own. The rest of the world could fall away and the city wouldn't, and you know, until the food stopped coming, the city wouldn't even notice.
Although, being from only cities, is to my mind, my take is that the buildings are part of my landscape.
Yeah.
And
well, that's the difference, I think, in where you grew up,
yes,
what your childhood experience is, what feels normal.
Yes.
Or right. Let's say right for normal. But yeah.
Or just what you're used to and so on.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So
anyway, that's a long,
no
wrangling
problem.
Story to, where was I going with that?
Oh, you had the horizon, you had the, space moving in.
Cosmic, yes, this fascination, this obsession with walking on the tops of things. So that, for me, is like a horizon line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my own body walking, it's like writing my own body on the landscape. So I discovered these huge snow piles last May at the airport, Dornbau, which is now Trudeau Airport.
Yes.
And my first impression, my first thought was, oh, I have to get out, I have to walk on the top of these, and I have to get somebody to videotape
it.
So, of course, I got Paul and we went there a couple times. But at that point, the snow was just, it was still quite high, but it was very black. And you could see it melting, dripping, and it was all this gooey, crystallized black stuff, which was really, and then thinking of warm snow and black snow, and from there I just went to neige noire, which seemed very, to me, evocative of what it was that I really wanted to focus on in this exhibition.
Okay.
Was, and for me that was the link.
And so then it was there, you've been just focusing on that idea and then creating stuff that was focused on that idea?
Well, I knew that I wanted to, I could see this big mural, that composite mural in behind the two sculptures of all these pieces of different, slightly modulated tones of cream and white and beige, with all the same image of a video still of TV snow. And it's not white, it's black. It's the background, which is white. So, neige noire, I really liked that.
Okay.
That contrast is like a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a possible thing.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think of it as being possible. But there it was, that big pile of black snow. So I liked that.
That's cool.
Incongruity.
And I like how you actually did bring it all from one to the, from a point A to a point B.
Yeah, well, it's probably not done yet either. It'll go on somewhere else.
That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
Then when you talk about walking on snowbanks, the first thing that comes to mind is with Francois Sullivan, with, because I didn't see the dance piece because I wasn't around them, but at the show where she had pictures of her dancing on snowbanks. Okay, so there's a whole other thing that could be followed.
I think that too, the idea of walking on the snowbanks, when once I started to really live the making of the exhibition, I was getting all these memories of when I was a kid in the country, and I grew up on a farm, and open fields, they would put up what they call snow fences.
Yeah.
They would come every fall and roll out these big, long snow fences and plant them in the field. So that it would catch the snow. And The snowplow would, after a storm, he would have to go down the road at least 4 times to clear out the road, just to push it back on either side.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would come back again once he had made one huge mountain on one side of the road, and he would sort of take the wing of the snowplow, raise it,
mm-hmm.
and push halfway back on the snowbank so that you would get one really flat side
mm-hmm.
and then a pointed side
okay.
farther back. So you
mm-hmm.
could climb up and walk. It was like another road
yes,
on
mm-hmm.
top, on beside the road. Great path for
uh-huh.
kids.
Sidewalk.
Sidewalk, yeah, an elevated sidewalk in the country on the snow.
Mm-hmm.
So I would walk on that to school
mm-hmm.
all the time. And if you were daring enough,
yeah.
you would go up to the point, to the,
okay.
the real mountainous
mm-hmm.
side or peak beside it. And sometimes it was high enough that you could touch the hydro wires.
Ooh, okay.
Which we were definitely warned not to do. You're not birds. You're touching the ground. So
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of snow.
Yes.
So it was interesting remembering that, reliving that experience
mm-hmm.
of how snow can, it's just like it obliterates everything in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It just changes the whole landscape.
Yep.
And of course there were always stories of don't go out in a snowstorm.
Yes.
You know, even, you know, they'd be like rural legends,
yes.
we call them urban legends,
yes.
but they rural legends, which were not legends, they were true,
mm-hmm.
based on fact. You know, a farmer
yes.
goes out from his house to the barn
mm-hmm.
and gets lost, you know, in 50
yes.
feet, he gets lost in a snowstorm, and you find him frozen in the snowstorm the next,
mm-hmm.
or in the snowbank
yeah.
the next morning. So I have
yeah.
all these, growing up, you have all
mm-hmm.
these visions of snow being
okay.
this terrible thing that can eat you. Seeing the
yes.
truth in the TV.
Yeah, now,
so.
those the prints that are sort of in between the little man and the wall piece now do make an awful lot more sense to me.
The prints?
Yes.
The ones with the words?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I go back and actually look and try and figure out the combination
yeah.
between the words and so on.
Yeah. Being,
this is why it's better to almost talk beforehand. So yeah, as I say, okay, it sounds intriguing. Okay, yeah,
no,
I gotta check this out.
No, I think it's interesting to go and get your own reactions
oh,
first. So then you go in with, you're
mm-hmm.
like, fresh.
Although there are, to my mind, there are two ways, and obviously neither one is better than the other. But it is depending on level of engagement upon coming in and so on, and at which point if there is. Yeah, just yeah, due to the urban nature, we're constantly bombarded by a whole whack of stuff trying to grab our attention, at which point if there is, and you get inured to it and used to it, and if there is no real hook, or it's just been like, for some reason I'm tired or something like that, and I'm not like really concentrating as much as I should, then at which point, it just, it's almost like a switch gets turned on or off, and then to... Yeah, have a different manner to get back in is equally valid.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other times when going and say, oh, and to my mind, that's one thing I'm realizing with art is that to me, if there is a sense of discovery in it, it is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
If it's sort of like, yeah, take the Shirley with Sallow or however I mispronounce her name show, Rennie Blue Went, where it's
mm-hmm.
just bam, they're up there, and at which point I'm supposed to say they're amazing, wonderful, they no, in and out in 30 seconds, and I'm on to something else, which is to me much more engaging on my level.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I'm certain if I were to talk to Rennie Blue Went or Shirley with Sallow
yeah.
or something like that,
they're
there would
to.
Be something that probably would engage me, but I'm just missing that entirely. Due to a whole wide variety of reasons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she has as many stories for her work
yes.
as I
mm-hmm.
do for mine, I'm sure.
Yeah. yeah, there, I mean, I've actually got stuff written down, because that does take me through the show very nicely. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah.
But what got you into art?
Mm.
And before you answer, would you like some more coffee?
No, that's
okay.
Fine. don't know if there's a specific thing that got me there, because there was certainly nothing around me that encouraged that.
Mm-hmm.
I came from 5 generations of farm family.
Okay.
It was like the land, the animals, the work.
Mm-hmm.
I think what threw me out of that,
mm-hmm.
is my mother died in an accident, a car accident, when I was 6. So when something like that happens,
mm-hmm.
to you at that age, it's like your whole world is switched from going one way, it goes a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everything is different. You don't understand anything,
mm-hmm.
and you have to negotiate an entirely new horizon,
mm-hmm.
a new situation. And I think that really set me up for listening, for watching,
mm-hmm.
for trying to understand, well, what the hell is this world all about? It's not at all what I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if I was thinking. I probably wasn't
yeah.
even thinking at that
mm-hmm.
point.
Yeah, you were just different.
I was just a kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing my life,
yeah.
doing, playing on
yeah.
the snowbanks,
yeah.
right? And then this happens, and it changed everything for
okay.
me. And I don't ever remember, you know, saying, okay, I just always knew that I would be an artist.
Okay.
I thought, either I'll be an artist or be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know which. And I'm finding that I'm more and more both.
Okay.
And that I don't have to separate them.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways of bringing them together.
And it dovetails nicely with working with paper.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There, it's, yeah, first of all, you made reference to, if I remember correctly, a younger brother.
Yeah.
Do you have any other siblings, or just the one?
I have 3 brothers.
Okay.
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest?
They're all younger.
Okay. Are they all farmers?
It's funny, no. We are all in the arts.
Oh, very cool. Okay.
Yeah, which is a bit unusual.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All in different aspects of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
Music. He's actually a businessman right now,
mm-hmm.
but he's a very competent musician.
Okay, cool. Was your dad disappointed that nobody picked up the family farm?
You know, I think he was initially. He had this romantic notion of farming,
mm-hmm.
farming with his family,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think he was a farmer either.
Okay.
He, after my mom died, he slowly became more interested in municipal politics.
Okay.
And my whole childhood, I know him as more being gone,
mm-hmm.
you know,
doing
the politician
mm-hmm.
thing. I think he was much more of a people person.
Mm-hmm.
So he was sad, I think, to see the whole idea of the family farm being sold,
mm-hmm.
and you know, not carrying on.
Yeah.
But all my aunts and uncles are still on the farm,
okay.
so it's not like.
Yeah.
It's completely gone.
Okay. There it's also, I'm sort of thinking in terms of with, yeah, from hearing that, and at which point if you're saying like your dad was gone most of the time, then without your mom, it's like, there is like, everything is open and there is no real sort of like authority figure. And I can remember
yeah.
when I was growing up, both my parents are academics,
mm-hmm.
and up until about the age of 18, I was thinking the only thing I could do was be an academic. And it suddenly was realizing, you know, there's a whole lot of other stuff out there that I can do. And that was just, yeah, mind-blowing, for lack of a better term. And then to have that sort of experience earlier on just then opens up a whole, yeah, enormous set of possibilities.
Yeah. Well, my grandmother was there, my
okay.
mother's mother. She came
mm-hmm.
to help
yeah.
out. After the accident,
mm-hmm.
and she just never left.
Okay.
So it was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
She was really the anchor for
okay.
us. She was at that point she was 60 something,
mm-hmm.
and she moved in, and she just got older with us, and she was
mm-hmm.
amazing.
Yeah, I'm not supposed to play psychiatrist or analyst or anything like that. So we'll let that one slide.
Yeah.
How did you Yeah, actually, so now that you sort of have a handle on how you got into art, when did you have a sort of recollection of when you realized you were an artist? Was it sort of
every
like,
day. It's like,
well,
oh my God.
That first one.
I don't remember that.
Okay.
Now there was no kind of epiphany.
I'm not thinking. I'm not looking so much for epiphany, but more sort of like validation, in terms of where I know that like I got into the art gallery knowing nothing about art whatsoever, and then it's sort of like over time I can look at various points that have happened and realize, well, people actually think I know what I'm talking about, and then I sort of snicker and say, I don't know any more than anybody else, but they're still listening to me and saying, okay. And so therefore, that is a stamp of validation. Yes, I actually do run a gallery, and people understand and respect that, and understand and disrespect that, depending on their perspective and views and so on. But it's nonetheless, yeah, it's not like I'm a garbage man, I run a gallery. Do you have a similar type of...
It's funny, I don't think I ever felt the necessity of having that outside validation. It's never been the impetus for me, but I will mention one anecdote which sticks with me, really, because it's more about my father. For him, he really needed the validation. And he wanted to go to my graduation from university. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. To me, that felt like I didn't care. It's like, it's nothing to do with what I'm doing now. And he was so disappointed. And then the following year, I won a prize, big prize, at the local art gallery. This is in Southern Ontario. And I said, you know, Dad, this means way more to me than this piece of paper saying that I have a BFA from blah blah university. And he bought that piece. So maybe that's how I would respond to that question.
Do you have any internal validation as to, I don't know, attempt to flog the dead horse before I realize it's really, really dead?
Well, it's something that I have to, I think you have to do it every day.
Okay.
So say to yourself, I am an artist. And find, make pleasure with that, because there's nothing out there in society that's going to, if you want some idea of success or recognition or whatever, money or whatever it is that you think will feed you as an artist, for me, it's I don't have that.
Okay.
It's never been important or something that came.
Okay.
Something that happened.
Give it some time.
Yeah, we're wet.
So, it's also a very same way of handling stuff that has not happened yet.
I didn't understand.
Oh, in terms of, it's sort of like what you said, if you have any desire for fame, money, recognition, and so on, then you made the aside of, which hasn't happened yet, although it's getting there, and so on. And
well,
right,
I do have a certain recognition here. It's, you know, it's...
But it's still, as far as a sane way of handling that, in terms of where it's like, I come up with a line, it's better to be a big fish in a small pond than a small fish in a big pond, which is another way of just handling the circumstances and saying, okay, I'm doing what I want. It's making life extremely enjoyable. I can't imagine... I pop out of bed every morning. I assume it's similar with you, and at which point,
it's like, what
who cares?
Is going
who cares?
To happen today? Who knows? It's something that gives me immense pleasure. That it's just the way I am in this world.
Okay, so I take it you don't have a day job?
I try not to. I try to avoid it as much as possible.
Yeah, given that I still, although probably over time, I will slowly wrap my brain around the fact that you are not a paper artist. Nonetheless, I'm still stuck there for the time being.
That's all right. My mother-in-law is still stuck there too, but that's all right.
What got you into the paper? Because I also find it just a very it's not, to me, although it works on paper, it is so standard, it's ridiculous. To do paper
work
is not very standard at all. It's what I've seen is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah. It's, that too is a bit of a circuitous and long story, but when I finished undergrad, I moved to Quebec. I wanted to be immersed in Quebec culture. I wanted to speak French. I wanted to be Quebecois. So here I am. I felt very isolated. Obviously, I didn't know a soul. I lived in Quebec City.
Okay.
And there was a printmaking studio there. So I started taking courses. I had done a little bit of printmaking at that undergrad. And really got enthralled with lithography. And in printmaking, it's always about the paper, what kind of paper you use. And there's lots of times where you make mistakes, so you have really a lot of very beautiful paper that goes into the garbage. And I was at a point where I realized that I wanted to go into the third dimension. I wanted something to come into the space. I wanted to work with sculpture.
Okay.
So I started to think that, okay, paper, it's flat, but it's a slurry at one point, it's a pulp that you can manipulate into a shape, and you can do that through molding. I was going out with a guy at the time who was learning ceramics, so I have at my disposition all the tools of ceramics and mold making. So I learned how to make molds. And I just started to play. I ripped up those papers in little tiny bits and put them in a food processor, a blender, and made my own pulp. And I put them in one of these molds. And that was the moment of discovery for me that I could go into space with a piece of paper.
Okay. Cool.
And from there, it's just been one investigation of different types of fibers, what's out there that I can use to make papers, different ways of using space and paper, bringing it into space.
Okay, when you're making a piece, given that my take from speaking with you is that there is an awful lot of thought involved before it squirts out, do you consciously think of the medium you're going to be using, or do you let the medium dictate how the thought gets transformed?
I think it's always the thought that comes first, unless I'm just playing around in the studio with the materials, which happens sometimes, and the materials bring you to the thought. But for me, it's mostly a lot of dreams.
That I get.
Writing, reading, thinking. I think it's often the idea that will.
But there, what I'm thinking of more is, okay, you have this idea. Do you think that, okay, given that, yes, I'm slowly trying to wrap my head around that you're not just a paper artist.
Right.
From the thought, does the thought dictate the medium you're going to use to make the art? Or is it that you're working in this medium at this time, therefore you're going to, which I'll channel the thought through that, i.e., whereas to take the concepts behind Neige Noir, turn it into an entire video show would be possible.
Yeah.
To take it and put it just as works on paper with no video aspect at all also would be possible. When, from that thought, is it that, these are what I'm working with now, these are the most convenient tools at hand, hence this is how the medium ends up? Or is it that from this thought, this is the most appropriate media, this can only be done on video, this can only be done on paper, this can only be done with a paper sculpture?
It's never that black and white for me. it becomes, it becomes really gray. It really becomes, it's like, and often too, you know, you're making things and you don't stop and think, oh, that work, it came from that thought,
mm-hmm.
or that work was really guided by that material. It happens so quickly sometimes
mm-hmm.
and so fluidly that you don't stop to really articulate and take apart each
mm-hmm.
deconstruct, let's use that nice word.
No,
the
process
to say that, you know, it came from here or there. I think for me that it's really a blend.
Okay.
It comes
mm-hmm.
at me, sometimes I feel totally overwhelmed
mm-hmm.
by what is coming at me. It's too much
mm-hmm.
that I have to step back.
Okay. Is it the sort of thing with a specific piece?
Too many ideas. I want to make too many things
okay.
at the same time, or it's like
mm-hmm.
this cornucopia just overflowing.
Okay.
It's like, whoa!
yeah, do you have... Oh, wait a second, let me start crossing stuff off. Okay, there we go. That. Oh, got that. Got that. We're sort of there. Yeah, do you have any specific goals as an artist, sort of like career goals? You want to have your face smacked on the cover of Art Forum? Or...
It's funny, I keep trying to... I sense a level of frustration
mm-hmm.
in myself sometimes about where I am and where I have gotten to so
mm-hmm.
far. I've got over 20 years of career
yeah.
in me. And sometimes I feel like, well, shit, this isn't where I expected to be, but where the hell did I expect to be?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure, because when you talk about seeing my face on Art Forum, I think, I don't know if that's me.
Okay.
I don't know if I really want to be there,
solo,
if I care about that.
Solo short moment.
Why not?
Okay.
But there's a part of me that says, I don't think the world's that interested in my work.
You never know until you try.
Not there, it's...
But
are you going to submit anything to the Whitney Biennial?
No.
Why not?
I don't even know when the submission date is.
August.
Well, say that. I have no idea.
Not there, it's apparently they are.
I didn't even know they accepted submissions. I just assumed
no.
there was a jury. I'm totally naive, you know, I just...
Not there, it's more, it's I discovered... I thought it also was a very secretive, behind closed doors process of everybody saying, whoa, we're going to push this
yeah.
and so on. Here's the
yeah.
$50,000, put my artist in, and so on. They've actually posted vague guidelines. I don't know, send us 30 slides in an artist statement, which is about as much of a guideline as you get with anything being an artist.
Oh, really?
And then an address. But then the big thing is that they actually, for the biennial, they've got two outside curators who have then gone on record as saying we are looking for stuff that
yeah.
is not part of the
canon. Check it out.
Mm-hmm. I will get you the address.
Yeah, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay, so then if which one? Solo show at MoMA would be good.
Just a little show even in a museum here
mm-hmm.
would be good.
Okay.
Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting something in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the cities are so entrenched in their own artists or images
mm-hmm.
that even getting, I mean, even the artists from Quebec City, they have a hard time showing
yes.
in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's vice versa, I don't know.
Well, there to my mind, it's coming at it not as an artist, as solely as a huckster and a marketer. To me, it'd be the sort of thing of knocking together some sort of portfolio and then sending it off to like Phoenix
mm-hmm.
or Santa Fe. Santa Fe, probably there would be scads of galleries that would
mm-hmm.
adore your stuff. Because
mm-hmm.
it does strike me that, yeah, they got sand and lots of heat, and here there is
snow
and lots of cold. But it's also more sort of just, again, coming back to the paper stuff, and give me, I don't know, about 6 months, and I will complete the circle and realize you're not just a paper artist. But it is that sort of much more fragile and not ephemeral, but just
mm-hmm.
not quite there spirit that I get from what
yeah.
little I know about the art scene in Santa Fe. And at which point, then aiming there or say some gallery down in like Miami or whatever, they then revalidate what is up here, to use that nasty word.
Mm-hmm.
And at which point, suddenly, if you can go like tell Sylvian that, yeah, okay, I got like a 700 word review in like the Miami Times or whatever the paper
yeah.
is, she says, woo, and suddenly you're an international star. When in actual fact, the gallery in Miami might be even smaller than Sylvian's.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
But it is, that's why to me it's like with catalogs where I've dropped the ball for about a year and a half or 2 years now, but to make catalogs of all the shows here, to recognize that no, there's no way that people are going to pay attention, but if I can, bam, slap a catalog on their desk and say, this is what you missed.
Yes.
And over time, they will then say, ooh, maybe we should check this out, or here, show me the next catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's there. Go west, Jungles.
Well, yeah. No, it's a long process, and it takes really... For me, I've always privileged the work in the studio, and I think that's to the detriment of most artists. That's where our interest is.
Okay.
So, if you're not out there
pushing
it, or if you don't have somebody who just somehow is in the right position and they fall in love with your work and they push it out there for you.
Yeah, it's like a writer with an agent, an actor with an agent.
Yeah.
This is what you want to do. Therefore, somebody else does their job so as to then get you what you can do, which is where I say 50% commission is wonderful if the gallery is doing what they're supposed to. And I'm annoyed as all hell with Joyce Yehuda because she's got her store thing. And at which point she's taking 50% commissions and she's not doing diddly squat other than saying, okay.
Well, she's invested a lot of...
And whatchamacallit, Biltmore up the street have invested a lot of money as well.
Yeah, but people have a tendency to need sofas more than they need...
Burks has invested a lot of money. Oh, everybody needs a diamond ring.
Yeah, but it has a symbolic value. That's really...
No. Oh, I'm not disputing the prices she puts on it. What I'm saying is that if she's taken 50%, if I'm an artist, I want her out there hustling her ass on my career. The stuff she puts in the store, she is not doing anything more than Burks does with some young jewelry designer.
Yeah.
The young jewelry
designer. I don't know. She's trying something.
I yeah.
think. That's valid. Like you're trying something here, you know? I don't want to judge people too harshly.
Oh, I'm not judging her, nor am I saying that I don't like the idea of the store.
Right.
I'm just saying I think she should be taking 20 points, 30%. Doing the stuff on consignment for somewhere around there, which is standard issue store stuff. And then if, because of, I don't know, suddenly there's a run on somebody's art, she says, oh, this might be an artist who's worthwhile for me to represent. Then start taking the 50%. And at which point, if you're representing, it's sort of thing of like, okay, if you're a actor and you have an agent who says, I get 15% of every paycheck, you get, and then you're the one out there going to the auditions, identifying the auditions, doing the hustling so as to get work, and the agent is just sitting there on their duff doing nothing. What do you need them for? She has, yes, she has the place to sell stuff, but she's not doing anything to promote the careers of those specific artists in the stores, so at which point make it that much more accessible or give the artist that much more money, keep the prices the same, and at which point, yeah, let the artist scoop up 50% more for working on the math, because then they will be that much happier, saying, well, I'm actually making some money here. But that's a whole aside.
Yeah.
But then speaking, how did you end up hooking up with Sylvia?
Oh, that's a funny story. When I first moved to Montreal, that's 10 years ago now, I went back to school. I decided to get an MFA, and I got a job. I needed a job. And she was working then as I don't know what her title was, mm-hmm. but she worked at TransArt.
Okay.
Which is an art moving
yeah.
company.
Mm-hmm.
And I subsequently got hired. I was the first woman they ever hired.
Okay.
So that's where I met her.
Mm-hmm.
And she made a few career changes after that.
Mm-hmm.
And we had always hit it off.
Okay.
So when she started her business,
mm-hmm.
she asked me if I wanted to be part of it. And I said, sure, why not? So that's 5-6 years ago.
No.
I don't know. So.
And do you have a regular schedule where, like, every year you'll be having a show, or is it more?
It's more once every 2 years.
Okay.
Something like that.
And is it that you then, bam, this is the deadline for me to have stuff, or is it that?
Oh, it's more flexible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then along those lines, how'd you meet Paul? Well, I'm not certain this has anything to do with art.
Paul who? We
That's
met at a artist residency.
Okay.
Saint Jean Paul Joly.
Okay.
That's
it. Nah, that's
just
it.
Before I moved to Montreal. I was in the process of leaving Quebec City. I knew I was coming to Montreal,
mm-hmm.
and that's we met there.
Okay.
In a crazy 6-week insane time with people from Mexico and Europe and in Montreal.
You know, but I know a bunch of people who've done that residency.
It was a very interesting moment.
Okay. And then, bam, bam, bam. Then I have two more, and then one more, actually three more. One that doesn't have to be written down. Are there any non-local artists that you really, really like?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I've always liked Judith before. I like the idea that she's 90 years old and she's, it's really since she's been 80.
Okay.
70, 80 that her career's taken off. But I've always liked her work, this
mm-hmm.
kind of tinge of materials which are really
okay.
important,
mm-hmm.
but there's this psychology behind them that's really very
okay.
strong. I like Frances Ellis.
Okay, I'm not familiar with them, given that it's Frances. I don't
that's
know.
That's interesting. Both of those artists are people who have moved away from their home and taken up a new culture, a
okay.
new home. Louise Bourgeois from France.
Mm-hmm.
She's lived in New York all of her adult life. Francis Ellis is Belgian, and he lives in Mexico City, and he's a practicing artist. There's a lot of performance pieces that are very intriguing.
Okay.
Painting, installations,
I'll have
check
to check them out.
Very good.
And then?
But I've been as influenced, I think, by writers and poets as I have been by artists.
Okay. Any specific ones that pop to mind?
Yeah, a lot of Canadian poets I loved. Phyllis Webb, I read a lot of her work for
okay.
a long time. Milton Acorn. There's someone called Jabez. It's more like prose.
J-A-B-B.
J-A-B-B-E-S. He's a Jewish writer. I think he just recently died. He's
okay.
a Jewish... Jewish man born in Egypt, I believe, but who's lived all his life in Paris
okay.
and wrote in French. Really amazing writer.
Okay.
That's enough for now.
No problem. Although I find it interesting because they're when I ask that you like, and then you bring in influence.
Yes.
And
both.
Yeah, no, and there it's the sort of thing where I'm in asking the question, I think that it is possible to split the two of them up.
Yeah.
And given that I recognize there are influences on my life, but it's never that, I'm aesthetically or psychologically looking at a piece of art will just react to that on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously because I'm not an artist, it ends up, if it does influence me, it squirts out in a non-artistic way. And as far as direct influences of what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not artistic. I'm just realizing, okay, yeah, I've never combined the two in my life, but obviously from an artistic viewpoint, they are very much
mm-hmm.
combined.
Yeah.
One other small, and penultimate question,
mm-hmm.
Small thing, local artists.
That I admire?
Yeah.
Oh, I really like, I like someone like François Morella. I like people who can work with materials, who like materials, who see the sense of love of the materials, but who also have a conceptual bent. He is able to incorporate performance into his work.
Okay.
I like Nelson Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've only seen the one piece of his, but I was flabbergasted by it.
Yeah, I like his work a lot. Since I walk away, I'm like, I wanted to look at that.
That's okay.
Those are two men.
No, there's so this to get you out of thinking, or actually thinking on a different bent. In my interviews, with always with the question, so is there anything you think I should have asked? Or is there anything you'd like to ask me?
Yeah, I noticed that you're above Simchas.
Simca.
Simca.
Yeah.
Do they own the building?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow, that must be fascinating to be above them.
No.
Or
it's,
no,
it's hard. It's a pain in the neck.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They're
well, she died last February, about a year ago.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And, despite what it looks like, they are more wealthy than you can ever imagine. He owns 12 buildings on Salomo, lives at the sanctuary, has four kids, all of them doctors.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and then just because of various interpersonal, things that have happened, I'm just sort of saying, oh, but I don't think there's any landlord out there that I would have who I really would thoroughly enjoy. Or say it's a wonderful person.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my question is,
mm-hmm.
you've been here, what, 5, 6 years?
The gallery, 6 years.
Where are you headed? Do you see a next step? Do you see an evolution?
Yeah, there is. I've been making noises for about 4 years of wanting to open a second gallery that is much more traditional. Not white cube traditional, but is actually having a roster of artists and saying, okay, these are the guys that I will go to the mats for, and by hook or by crook, let me get them into dance museums, let me get them into collections, let's go make SCADS cash, and so on. Given that this place does take up way too much time, by its very nature is never ever going to be really financially stable, I found it extremely difficult to actually sit down and dedicate myself to that, which might necessitate me changing ideas and sort of jettison this and then just start the second one as a sort of like rebirth of the Phoenix or something like that.
Right.
But it is one thing that I adore about this is just being open to anything new, and it is if I open up a more traditional gallery roster, then at which point I become part of the establishment, which I never ever want to be.
Why are you doing that?
Yes, and no, there's like when, Monty Canson, when the Governor General's Award. There was this blog that I read where he made the comment, if you spend all your life railing against an establishment and then it recognizes you without changing one iota, then you failed. And I recognize that this place has given me a whole whack of credibility and established me and validated me and all sorts of other wonderful things that are important to me to jettison that. Not comfortable with it, and so at which point, so that's one thing. Basically, in a nutshell, I want to change the freaking art world in Montreal. It is the sort of thing where to me, there is no market because nobody cares about it except for the damn artists and the bureaucrats.
Why do you care?
It's tons of fun. It's, I come at it from, like, I used to work in the music business for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, like, regularly buy CDs. And okay, so what makes that cultural medium that much more, yeah, understandable, acceptable, accessible than this? And it is the sort of thing where, no, there really shouldn't be. And okay, so fine, John Cage is really, really theoretical as far as music, and who really likes the music of Philip Glass, but no, he shows up at Place des Arts, they spend $60 tickets and so on, and you can then spend $500 so to have a dinner with him. Hello, you do the same thing with art.
Mm-hmm.
And so yes, by making it, taking a rock and roll attitude to it, I'm saying, hello, let's go change, let's see if we can't get people to be more involved, which is then why I do all the bands, all the poetry readings, the films, the dance, and the theater as well here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I figure, you know, everybody gets niched, but if
mm-hmm.
they come in, it says gallery, then they look around, which I thought, oh, okay, galleries don't like, paintings aren't that dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, it does enable me just to sort of sit around, talk to people, and have a grand old time.
Yeah. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I need more of you.
I'm hoping there's, I have noticed not a large shift, but a small shift in things. Whereas, like, obviously, with the Canada, the changes to the Canada Council stuff,
mm-hmm.
where I think I am the only person that they got who said, yes, I'm all for.
Okay.
Yes. Because
yeah.
there it's, I'm recognizing that with the changes, my take on it is that given that it's the artists who are reacting, they're saying, oh my God. I'm going to be forced, if it's dependent on an exhibition, I'm going to be forced to paint those damn kids playing hockey.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, no, I'm a gallery guy. At which point, hello, Canada Council gives you $10,000 for an exhibition? Promise me $2,000 of it? Yeah, no problem. You don't have to change what you were doing, but by much more forcing exhibitions, then forces the Canadian public to take notice of it, and it will take.
I think what artists are finding difficulty with
mm-hmm.
is it forces you as an artist to slightly shift the essence,
mm-hmm.
the focus of what it is to be an artist, and that is the research. Call it research.
Mm-hmm.
That's the word we're forced to
yes.
use because of the.
The
lingo
yes.
that's around us, the way things function. But it's a focus on the development of our own work. And that you're forced to, away from that, to think exhibition. And it breaks up the fluidity of your focus.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes this event in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just part of
okay.
a whole
to me,
fluid line
it
of
is,
research.
Given that I do focus an awful lot on shows, to me, yes, I can recognize that the creation of art is important, but to, yeah, just leave it at that. It, to me, it's part of an entire continuum. It's from thinking to creation to exhibiting to selling.
Mm-hmm.
is all part and parcel. And if the Canada Council is attempting to force you guys to say, okay, as opposed to cloistering up in the studio and saying, oh, I'm an artist, which point, okay, so one day a year, you're forced to think about, okay, so where, how am I going to get other people to see
yeah,
this?
I think there were just other ways, like I mentioned earlier,
yeah.
why don't you encourage people to buy?
No.
And allowing tax deductions.
Different.
Then you don't change
yeah.
anything.
Canada.
The artist is not happy.
Yeah.
The galleries are happy.
Two.
The collectors are happy.
Two separate organizations. Canada Council can't do that.
I know.
They,
that has to come from
yes,
the government.
Exactly. They are saying this
the
is our situation and it has become untenable as it is, so we need to change it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that the creativity, the conceptual art will not go aside, not get Ignored. It's the one thing that I adore is in the Montreal one, where so I went to the meeting, and at which point I said, yeah, I have a list of 300 places in Montreal which do show art regularly, and that was back in November.
Mm-hmm.
And then some bright wag asked, so how are you defining galleries?
Yeah.
And they're going by some UNESCO thing that I can't find, but given the UNESCO definition of an artist, it's going to be equally broad.
Mm-hmm.
My list is now 800 places. And at which point, if there are 800 places, which I will put into the whole process and make sure that they are all recognized, then at which point to come up
that's
with...
That's not obvious that they are. It's going
to
be still...
That's, to me, is making people aware. And it is where you never think that in Montreal there were 800 places
mm-hmm.
that regularly show art. And the large majority of it is contemporary art. That just shows to me how many artists there are in Montreal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, I'm always leery of institutions to begin with.
Yes, oh,
so
I am
like
as well.
Off the bat, I don't trust them.
But to me, to be leery, go up and say, no, this is what you're doing that's wrong, go fix this. So come back to Monty Canson, it's the sort of thing where no, I'm railing against an institution, and if I can get them to change, that's all right.
But did he accept his award?
Pardon?
He accepted his award.
He accepted. Well, hello, $50,000 is nothing to sneeze at.
Well, if he refused it, that would have been a bigger.
Yes, my guess is... Like
he might have ended up getting more from somewhere else.
Are there any larger artist awards?
No, but he might have got different venues,
mm-hmm.
other places. I don't know. It's
mm-hmm.
I'm just being...
But yeah, in my mind, I do want to change the world, and I'm slowly making it. I've got Mark Mayer who showed up here yesterday.
That's great.
And I was very pleased.
Wow. He was doing the artist?
He was looking for music,
oh.
and for some reason thought, yeah, okay, Zeke's would be a good place to go find out where to find it. But yeah, it's the other reason why I can recognize a shift
mm-hmm.
in that I've had not two discussions with him,
yes.
and he has some very specific ideas, so is, and almost his mandate from the board of directors is to make
mm-hmm.
the place more popular,
yeah.
which is probably gonna piss off
yeah.
a whole whack of people, because they're not gonna, it's like SAT, where I call it a disc attack,
mm-hmm.
and other people tout it as, no, it's the next phase of the artistic venue, and
yeah.
they were doing multi, but it is, probably will end up going that way just because it's so damn easy,
mm-hmm.
but still making more people aware of art is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
There it's then with, you take somebody like Stephen Akane, who I have not had as many conversations with, but he is trying to change, and
mm-hmm.
those are both direct quotes from both of them, that
yeah.
trying to change. They're within the institution, which makes it a little bit more difficult to change.
Mm-hmm.
Being from the outside, I can just rail all I want, and let's hope something works.
Yeah. Well, keep at it.
Thank you very much. I plan on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
And then, yeah, as I said, I will get this transcribed hopefully within a month. I will then get it edited myself so that it does, doesn't make anybody look stupid except for myself.
Oh.
And then email
you. I don't think you said anything too outrageous.
You never know. Difference between saying it and having it disappear
yes.
versus being on the printed word.
Yeah.
Email you that, and then go from there. But then also the idea of being, obviously, yes, I do want to stick it on the blog, but it's, I've also started pitching to Onweek Magazine, the CBC, and a wide variety of other places as, hello, I have these things that can
yeah.
be manipulated with whatever medium you want. And so I'm hoping that something sticks.
Yeah.
And if they do, I will let you know. Because I might have to come back for a follow-up interview, because as opposed to a general overview of the Montreal scene, they actually want you. Thank you very, very much.
Oh, thanks, Chris. That's good. Do you want to look at the images?
Yeah, they are.
Or do you want to just...
That I do.
seems